So do you have to be up in years to write a profound lyric? The answer is no, if you ask any artist who's recorded the songs by Joseph Habedank. And he's here along with us for the hour.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Was the first time I really encountered the Perrys and sat down and interviewed the Perrys, and there he was sitting across the table, and everything Libby said about the group, he kind of contradicted in a way, from his dress and fashion to his hairstyle and how conservative the group is, and he really is a conservative guy. In fact, if I wanted to really say something interesting about him, he's probably one of the oldest guys I know in a young guy's body. Do you get that much?
You know, I do. I don't know whether to take it as a compliment or not, though, just because. But yeah, I think my family especially considers me as somewhat of an old soul. Yeah. And, you know, I try to be hip and young, and my wife keeps me up to date on fashion and so forth. But I guess being an old soul is not a bad thing. And actually, you know, my parents split up when I was young, so I grew up in a single-parent household, and my brothers kind of relied on me in a lot of ways. And so I think that also made me grow up fast. So, yeah, I guess I am somewhat of an old man.
Are you the oldest?
I am. Yeah, I have two younger brothers, and we're all a year apart. I'm 26. I've got a brother that's 25 and a brother that's 24. And then I have a sister who came along later, and she just graduated high school. She's almost 18.
And you grew up in Ohio, right?
I did. I grew up right outside of Dayton, Ohio. There's this little town called Xenia, and I grew up there. And we actually spent more time in Dayton than we did Xenia, though, because our home church was there, and my mom was the pastor's secretary for many years. She just recently moved to Somerset, Kentucky, but she was the pastor's secretary for probably 15 years or so. And so we were actually more in Dayton than we were Xenia. But yeah, Xenia is my hometown.
Joseph Habedank, by the way, is who we're with, and he's known as the lead guy of the Perrys, and I just absolutely love what you bring to the table with the Perrys. I think it's incredible. But as most artists seem to wear multiple hats, whether it's a producer or, you know, whether it's just the guy who maintains the bus in between dates, you really wear this hat of songwriter that I wonder how many people out there really know a lot of these songs we're going to hear today that you have written, and as I said earlier, at such a young age. Where do you find, and this can be a spiritual answer or a simple one, but where do you find the inspiration to say something that hasn't been said already or in a different way?
Well, it's funny. I was actually just, before you got here, I was just looking over a list of hooks, is what we call it in town, in my phone. I have a little note section in my phone that says hooks, and that's what I go to when I go to a writing session, whether it be with Tony Wood or Sue Smith or Jim Brady or Rodney Griffin or whoever I'm writing with at the day, and they'll say, well, what do you have? And I'll bring out this hook. And I was actually looking over those today and thinking, you know, where do the majority of these come from? And I think the biggest thing that I draw inspiration from is people and things that they say. I mean, there could be something said in this interview, maybe a cliche of some sort, that I think, man, that'd be a great idea for a song. In fact, the first song that I ever wrote was, the first song that was ever cut that Matthew Holt and I wrote was called He Forgot, and the hook line is He Forgot More Than I'll Ever Know, and that was just from a little cliche line we had heard, and I do that a lot, and of course, I draw a lot of inspiration from personal struggles, and my wife is a great source of it. She's a writer as well, and I get a lot of inspiration from her. My mom, who, as I said before, is a single mother, I draw a lot of inspiration from her. Other music, I listen to music for literally hours upon hours a day. I'll sing, you know, from 7 to 9 or 10 at night, and then I'll get on the bus and I'll sit in the back lounge and listen to music for hours. And I've actually started writing more melodies now than I have lyrics. I'll sit in a room with lyricists like, I used their name before, but Tony Wood and Sue Smith are two great lyricists in town. And the two people that probably aren't recognized by a lot of listeners, but they write lyrics, and I just come in and try to write a melody. And that's fun for me because I listen to so much music, and it feels so much more natural for me to say, hey, I can put a tune to that word or those words. And then, of course, preaching, of course, is also a huge huge source of inspiration. Unfortunately, I don't get to be in a ton of church services because a lot of times the Perrys are the ministers, so to speak, of the evening. So I don't get to be in a lot of preaching services, but when I am, I always listen. And I learned that from Rodney Griffin, who told me some of the best songs that he's ever gotten were from preachers. And I think another thing is to listen to other writers, and that's something that I've done. When I started in the business, I was 17 years old, and I'm 26 now, so it's been almost 10 years, and I learned so much from these older writers because I recognize that not only do they know more than me, but I respect that, and I try not to let it intimidate me, but rather I draw from their experiences and their wisdom and so forth. And so really, there's a lot of different things.
With He Forgot, that's one that I've been in the studio and played the song and thought to myself, I wonder if he was sitting in a church service and heard a preacher say this, because some of those lines sound like maybe some old country preachers who might have said something, He Forgot More Than I'll Ever Know. Do you remember exactly where you heard that line, or was it in, like you say, multiple places?
I do, actually, and it was not a preacher. It was far from it. It was Steve French. that was at Dollywood, and the Kingdom Heirs were singing, and I believe he was referring to Arthur Rice, who is absolutely one of my favorite singers and someone else I've learned a ton from when it comes to the vocal side of what we do, which is obviously a huge part of what we do, and he's taught me so much as well. But he said, you know, Arthur has forgotten more than I'll ever know about music. And I thought, man, you think about what Jesus did. You know, when he takes our sins, the Bible says he casts them as far as the east is to the west, never to be remembered again. And I thought, he really has forgotten more than we will ever be able to comprehend or realize or know. Because let's face it, I mean, we may not even remember a sin that we committed yesterday. And that the fact that he knows every single one of them, and if we've asked forgiveness for it, he's forgiven that already, is pretty pretty spectacular and amazing thought to me.
Joseph Habedank's here with us today, and we're playing songs that he's had a hand in writing, in some cases may have written both the lyrics and the music. And you've got it here on Daniel Britt and Friends. This is the Perrys, and He Forgot.
Well, I knew my sins were many, and I knew that I was heading down a road of sorrow, pain, and woe. I could not count the times that I had fallen short and failed him, but he still threw away all sin, and he saved my soul. He forgot more than sins, and he washed me white as snow. I remember what I used to be, but he forgot it all when he set me free. I don't deserve the grace that he bestows. He forgot more than I'll ever know. Minded when Satan tries to tell me, he recalls the times I've let God down. But then I remind him of a Savior who died for countless failures. From chains of sin I am no longer bound. He forgot more than I'll ever know. When he took my sins and he washed me white as snow. Grace that he bestows. He forgot more.
listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with Joseph Habedank, my guest today. Getting to know Joseph a little bit better. He's the lead guy for the Perrys, but also the songwriter behind the songs we're hearing today. Let's go to this next one, because this is one that when the Inspirations, which they have a very unique and identifiable sound, when you and I grew up on the Inspirations, I was probably barely out of my toddler years when I was attending the Inspirations concert. So I know Inspirations music. But when I heard this one, it fit them, but it was also a little bit like, this is different. Mm-hmm. And then I found out you wrote it, and I was just on my way to this interview, actually, listening to a conversation I had with Phil Cross, another great songwriter.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the way he does this a lot, and I told him this. I love the way that he takes and turns a phrase. And I know most writers probably, you know, get their kicks in doing that. But you've done that with The Rose, and, you know, you could just sit down and just say it and not put a whole lot of artistic nature into it, I guess. But when you turn a phrase, it catches my ear, I'll tell you.
Well, thank you. And there's a really cool story behind this song, because we had just sat down, the group, the Perrys, had sat down to pick songs for an album called Look No Further. And I think I had already had maybe three songs on the album with Matthew. I think two I wrote with Matthew and one I had written with my mom, Grip of Grace. And so we were meeting with our producer, Wayne Hahn, and we needed a fast song. Mm-hmm. And so I literally left the meeting. It was in Gallatin, Tennessee, at our home church, College Heights Baptist Church. They've got a little choir room, and we were writing down on the little board what we were going to record and so forth. And so I left that night, and I had this idea that I'd gotten from a Karen Peck song called Last Night. And this morning the rose blooms in the garden. I thought, yeah. Wow, I wish you could find a way to say the rose rose without it sounding too redundant, so to speak. So I started writing the song, and I ended up giving it to Matthew, and Matthew finished it with me. And then I pitched it to the group. Needless to say, the group did not record it. Mm-hmm. And we, out of the blue, just pitched it to the Inspirations. And the coolest thing about this cut to me is that I believe that this song was on the last album that Archie Watkins was on, and the fact that,
wow,
you know, he had sang for 40 some odd years with the same group, and I grew up listening to him. And, you know, some people may not like the Inspirations music because it's old school, and maybe people my age typically wouldn't latch onto that sound, but man, I am still so grateful to the veterans and to the people that have paved the way for us. And the fact that growing up, it puts it all in perspective for me to think about growing up in Dayton, Ohio, this spiky-haired punk kid was listening to the Inspirations on the front row of Dayton Memorial Hall, and the fact that they are singing one of my songs, and not only this one, I think they've recorded nearly 10 of our song, Matthew and my songs, and man, it just blows my mind, and it makes me so grateful to think that the Lord can use me, just a kid, frankly, and that He can still use me, and it's just amazing to me. And so, yeah, but it's a cool song. And my mom actually makes fun of the song. She calls it the Dr. Seuss song, because, you know, the rose rose, the foe knows, you know. And my wife makes fun of the song. So they all keep me humble in different ways.
You keep mentioning Matthew, and I know the music publishing rights typically are listed out as Habba Holt, which is partially Habedank and partially Matthew Holt, right? Mm-hmm. And he was once a part of the Perrys, so your relationship continues in songwriting. You guys are good friends?
Yeah, he's my best friend, I would say. I have a best friend that I grew up with named Andy Sharpetta in Lexington, Kentucky. But outside of Andy and of course, my wife's probably my best friend of all. But, yeah, Matthew is just a dear friend. As far as what we call the business, he is definitely my best friend in the business. And I could not ask for a greater writing partner, a greater business partner. We've been business partners since we were probably 19 and 20 years old. We've never had a disagreement, knock on wood, to this day, thankfully. And I have to give him credit, because a lot of times he stands in the shadows, because I do more of the writing and I do all the pitching, but Matthew single-handedly runs the business aspect of a publishing company. And for those of you who knows what all that entails, it is quite a feat. And the fact that he does that and never complains and is always stays on top of it, and we keep great records, and the Lord is just, for young men, He's blessed us tremendously, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I don't deserve it, and I'm grateful for that too, and I'm grateful for Matthew. Absolutely.
And you mentioned, like, this song, we're talking about the Rose still and the inspirations we're going to hear in just a minute, but you pitched it to the Perrys, and they didn't. So I'm sure this has happened more often times maybe than not. And so how does that, how do you take that, you have to put on your big boy pants at that point, or how do they deliver the news that this doesn't seem like a Perrys kind of song and we're going to pass on it?
Well, you can always tell, I think, when they first listen, you can always tell, usually typically by body language, or Tracy and Libby don't say a whole lot when listening to songs anyway, so I know right away if they like it. If they don't say anything after I play it, then I'll know they don't like it. And they're never going to say, I don't like that song, or Joe, that's not a good song, or well, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's even harder to hear nothing, because, you know, you want feedback, and a lot of times they will just be quiet and try to keep the keep the peace, so to speak. And so, you know, it's still a growing and a learning process for me. I mention a lot, but I'm still young, so I'm still learning how all this works, and I try not to wear my feelings on my shoulders. Now, oftentimes, or sometimes I should say I do, and but I try not to take a pitch personally, because, you know, it's really at the end of the day, the best song has to win. And you have to recognize that, and even as a young writer, you have to recognize that. And I think it's getting easier as I get older. Sometimes you can get discouraged, but that can happen with anybody. And you just have to keep plugging away. And the song that they may not record, for instance, "He's Everything I Need," was a song the Kingsmen did, mm-hmm. That they passed on, and it did fairly well. So you just never know. A song that was written specifically for the Perrys may not fit the Perrys, and it might be better off with somebody else.
And we've seen that happen in other groups too, where one group may get the first cut on it, but it may not be till another group or even two groups down the road that come back and record it, and they actually put it on the charts. So you never know. But this one really stuck with the inspirations. It's "The Rose," and again, songwriting skills of Joseph Habedank behind it here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Yes, the rose rose, and now the foe knows he lost the battle when the Savior said so. You thought you could hold me, just look at what's empty. I'm putting on a new robe, no longer in grave clothes, since the rose arose.
Joseph Habedank is here with me as we're talking about songs that he's written. But before we get back to the songs, let's go back to Ohio, and you grew up, and you've alluded to it. You were listening to gospel music at a younger age than now. How early does it go back for you there? Because again, Ohio, we don't typically think of Ohio as being the hotbed of Southern gospel. So, how old were you when you went to your first concert?
I think that I was 5. It was at the Dayton Memorial Hall, and it was the Kingsmen, Gold City, and Heaven Bound. And I went with my Aunt Charity, my Uncle Josh, and I believe my mom. And my Aunt Charity took me up to talk to Brian Free. And I believe that she told him I wanted to sing like him when I grew up or something. Little did she know I was going to grow up to be a baritone and eventually a lead. But yeah, that was my first experience. I remember sitting, before we were in Ohio, we were actually in Michigan. And when I was 3 and 4 years old, I can remember having a little Walkman. And I would listen to the Singing Americans and Gold City and the Cathedrals and the Kingsmen. And man, you talk about, I can remember as a 3 and 4 year old little boy listening to the music and thinking, yeah, I love this. I mean, I want to do this. Yeah. And the fact that I get to do it just blows my mind, really. It's such an honor and a privilege. And I'm so grateful, really.
So the Perrys called eventually, or you auditioned, or somehow, we'll get to that, but were there any other even part-time groups or singing around church type things you did?
Yeah, I started singing with my family when I was 4 or 5, the Sandlins, and my papa would preach, and I used to sing with my brothers, Nate and Tim, and we would sing. And the first time we ever sang was "He's Still Working on Me" at First Baptist Forest, Ohio. That was, I guess that would have been 15... Am I right? Oh, 22 years ago since I sang my first song. And so I started singing. I actually sang with my family until I was 15 or 16. And I started filling in for a group in our church called the New Life Trio. And Toby Seiler, who was the manager of the group and our pastor's son, is now the lead singer for the Skyline Boys. So he's still in the business and a great singer and a great guy. And then I went solo for a little while. I won the Crab Family's talent contest 1 year, and they actually paid for me to do a CD at Daywind. I did it, and that was the CD that Tracy heard to hire me. So really, the Crabb family is pretty influential. And in the past, just in the past year, I've gotten so close to Jason, and I'm just so grateful to them. I just talked to Tara last night, and we text every now and again. And they, looking back, they indirectly are responsible for this. So thank you to them.
If that CD of you as soloist, if I told you that that was now available as an iTunes free download, would that make you happy or not?
That would make me happy. Is it available?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it would make...
Some people try to suppress those things, those early CDs, and they yeah, say, yeah, oh, I've grown so much since then, I don't want anybody to hear that. But you were doing pretty good?
Well, I think that I have grown a little bit since then. That's a good spin on that, Daniel. But yeah, I think it would be okay with me just because, even as a 16-year-old, I just loved it so much. And I guess the first thing that I thought was, am I going to make money off of that, iTunes downloads? Right. But no, I definitely feel like, hopefully, that I've grown vocally. And yeah, but it's still available somewhere. Cool. I've still got a few of them at the house.
Wow. Joseph Habedank and the songwriting skills really what blow me away. And when you look at the Perrys, we talked about a lot of other groups, but here's one the Perrys did that really was incredible. In fact, didn't you perform this at the Dove Awards?
Yes, we 2010, yeah. we got the word that it was nominated for Southern Gospel Song of the Year, and they asked us to perform the first time the Perrys had ever performed on the Dove Awards, and I believe the only time they've ever performed on the Dove Awards. And really, the song changed everything for me. I had never, I don't think that I really reached my full potential as a singer or as a songwriter, as an artist, until If You Knew Him came along. And it just started at convention one year, and Rodney came up and said, hey, you know, I'd like to write with you. And mm-hmm. and he's always been so encouraging and a mentor of sorts. He's the one that encouraged me to start our publishing company off the bat. And so I went to his house in Morristown, Tennessee, and my mom had given me this little phrase. She said, if I know him like I think I know him, he'll do such and such. And and Tracy had come to me and said he wanted a resurrection song. So I tried to take that hook, and I told Rodney, I said, what if we said, you know, if you knew him like I know him, you'd know that he's alive. And he started singing. He started singing the chorus, and it just went from there. And I'll be completely honest with you, when we first wrote it, I tried my best to talk him out of the Buddha Muhammad thing, because I thought it was just somewhat corny, maybe cheesy, and I told him that. I said, I just don't know if that I can sing that. And there are great songwriters to this day that tell me, Joe, you know, we admire you, and we're happy for you, and you're a good writer, but we don't like If You Knew Him. And it's crazy to me, but it also, it's something to learn from. But at the beginning, I really didn't like it, and boy, was I wrong. The first time we ever sang that song, we were somewhere, I believe it was in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we sang it, and I just knew from the beginning, I thought, this song is so much bigger than me. Mm-hmm. And it went on to win Song of the Year. It was my first number one song in December 2009, and went on to win Song of the Year in 2010 at the Fan Awards. We got to perform it at the Dove Awards. And really, it changed. Still, it's still changing, but it changed everything for me.
Wow. It's a great song, and the Perrys, of course, you can't hardly picture anybody else singing it. It just fits this group, too, and just the powerful, the way it builds, as a resurrection song should, and right. It was incredible. I was there at the Dove Awards that year, sitting at the Grand Ole Opry when you guys did that, and the place was pretty electric.
I was so nervous. I think that was the most nervous I'd ever been. In fact, our producer, Wayne Hahn, he said, he leaned over to the person next to him and said, Joe's nervous. I've never seen Joe nervous, and he's nervous.
Boy.
And I was a nervous wreck. We had done a pre-show before the actual show had started, and I got literally so sick. If You Knew Him didn't win in the pre-show, but that wasn't what made me sick. It was the fact that I had to perform in front of Stephen Curtis Chapman and Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, and Toby Mack. I mean, these people are just like, you know, they're totally it's just a different genre, frankly, even though it's all Christian music. And I got so sick, my dad had to go get me some Burger King, give me something to eat. I mean, I was literally, it tore me up. But we got through it, and I think it went fairly well. But just an honor. You know, even if we would have completely botched it, just the fact that we got to sing on the Dove Awards, and the Lord really helped me.
Here it is now, Joseph Habedank and the Perrys, If You Knew Him. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends.
I walked by the tomb of Buddha.
looked inside and saw his bones. Traveled on to see Muhammad, still wrapped up in his grave clothes. Then I journeyed to a garden where old Joseph left him lay, the precious lamb, God's own begotten, was no longer in that grave. If you're wandering in the darkness, come and step into the light. Nail-scarred hands reach out to help you, to pull you safe from death to life. And I too have stood where you stand. Could I trust in things unseen? Just one step in his direction, then in
is Daniel Britt and Friends with Joseph Habedank. My guest today is we're talking about his life, his career in gospel music thus far, but also his songwriting skills. And so when the Perrys found you, and let's go back to when they first brought you in, they didn't bring you in as lead singer, did they?
No, it was a baritone, actually, and which is what I was comfortable with at the time because my range was just not what I felt was a lead singer range. And when they initially asked me, I was sitting in the car wash in Morristown, Tennessee, when Tracy called me, and and offered me the lead singing job. I'd been with the group probably 3 years. Lauren had just left. Lauren Harris, great singer, taught me so much. And I just kind of was taken back, and I told Tracy, I said, there's no way. I said, I feel like I would be doing the group a disservice by taking the lead job. I want to do what's best for the group. And we tried out a lead singer that following weekend, and we were singing Boone, North Carolina at the Greens homecoming, and we walked off stage, and as sure as we're sitting here, the Lord said to me, you can do that. And I thought, I can do what? He said, you can do that. You can sing lead. And I thought, man, there's no way I can't do this. There's no way. And so I started freaking out. Wow. I promise you, I walked 100 yards to our product table, and there was a guy named Eric Hall standing up there, one of Tracy's best friends, and he pulled me to the side. He said, you know, I don't know why, but the Lord wanted me to tell you, you're supposed to be the lead, next lead singer for this group. And that was on a Saturday. We just had two dates that weekend. The next Sunday morning, we sang in Asheville, North Carolina at Biltmore Baptist Church, I believe is the name of it. And on the way home from that date, I told Tracy that I was scared to death, but that with the Lord's help and only His help, I would do it. And I learned to fully and completely rely on the Lord through that experience, because every night when I walked on stage, I had to ask for help. And there's still nights like that. If I'm sick, it's hard, because I am typically not a lead. I'm typically a baritone singer, but I've learned to expand my range a little bit, I hope. And I've had a great, great vocal teacher named Kelly Garner, who, when I first started having a little bit of vocal trouble from singing so high, Rick Shelton, the director of publishing over at Daywind, heard something of me. He said, hey, I want you to see somebody. I want you to be singing well when you're 40 and 50 years old. Wow. And he introduced me to Kelly, and she literally saved my career.
What year was that, whenever you switched parts up to lead?
I believe the year was 2006. Yeah, so that would have been 6 years ago. I'd been with the group 3 years already, and I've been singing leads for 6 years now.
Let's talk about this next song that Jeff and Sherry Easter have recorded called I'll Take It.
Yeah, I'm excited about this song. This is actually my most recent cut, and I am most excited about it because it's my wife Lindsay's first cut. She's been writing since she was a little girl. Just like me, we've been writing since we were little kids, and this is just a dream come true for her, and it is absolutely what I feel is one of the strongest things that I've ever had a part of, and I'm so happy for my wife. I'm thrilled for my wife. I'm proud of her, and I can't wait for you all to hear it. It actually came from Libby. Libby gave me the idea for the song, and she asked me to write it for her solo album, but I didn't get it finished in time, and so we ended up writing like a verse and a chorus thing, and I gave it to Lindsay, and she finished it for me, and I ended up demoing it, and it was, and Jeff and Sherry, I believe, were the first people we ever pitched it to, and they picked it up right away, and I already knew the song was, you know, you never know at first if it's going to be good or not, but I already knew the song was somewhat different, maybe a little special, as we call them, but I didn't realize how powerful this song was until I heard Jeff and Sherry's cut of it. And I just heard it in the past week. It's not even really released yet. Wow. So I am just totally thrilled about it, and I can't wait for everybody to hear it. I hope they love it as well. And it'll be on Jeff and Sherry's upcoming release. I think it comes out in August or September. And this is actually my first Jeff and Sherry cut, too. So excited about that as well.
You'll take it.
I'll take it. Yeah, absolutely. I thought that would be a good name. They've not named the record yet, but I thought that'd be a good name for a record too. I'll take it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
We'll see.
You've got it here with Jeff and Sherry Easter and a song written by Joseph and his wife Lindsay. Habedank here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Off in the distance, just up ahead, there's a valley waiting for me. I cannot face it, can't take one more step. I'm frightened by what I can't see. Silence consumes what is left of my day. But then He appears and I hear Him say, I'll take it, the trial you fear, and I'll make a way from right here. I just can't leave you alone. It's time to lay
are here with heartache too much to contain. But you're not alone, and now it is clear that Jesus is there through the pain. The giver of peace in the storm where you are whispers those words that break through the dark. I'll take it.
You're listening to Daniel Britton Friends. Joseph Habedank is with me, and we've mentioned your wife and mentioned the song, in fact, that we just heard by Jeff and Sherry Easter that she helped write with you. So tell me how you met her. Lindsay's her name, and you guys have been married, what, a couple of years now?
Yeah, we just celebrated our two-year anniversary, and we got to spend it in Rosemary Beach, Florida, which is now our favorite vacation spot. We had the greatest vacation that I think that we've ever had. And what's cool about our vacation, I haven't even told you this yet, Daniel, but we were driving from Destin, Florida, which is about 30 miles from Rosemary Beach, and Daniel Britt and Friends was on the radio, and we heard the Guy Penrod special.
Oh yeah.
And we listened to it all the way from Destin back to our little beach house. And Lindsay said, "This is so cool. I wish that Daniel would do this with you." And I said, "You know what? He's actually asked me to do it, and we haven't done it yet." So that's a cool little story. But yeah, fun. But yeah, 2 years, we've set 2 years, and it's been great. I've got the greatest wife imaginable. She is so supportive, and never complained. She's never once complained about my schedule. She never once asked me to come off the road. Just a complete perfect road wife.
And where'd you meet?
Kingsport, Tennessee. In fact, this next song that we're getting ready to go into, I wrote on the way home from a date with her. We were on a little date in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I drove home, and I started getting the words for this little song, and it sounded like an old Heaven Bound song. The verse was, you know, weary, downtrodden believer, I know. And I thought, man, that sounds like the Heaven Bound. And so I ended up finishing it, and the Kingsman recorded it. It's called He's Everything I Need. It was actually initially called That's All I Need, and we actually did a little title change on it. But man, that's another song that I thought, what a cool little quartet song, but I never realized it would be a radio song or my second number one song. And so that was just a huge surprise and blessing, and it's just pretty cool for me as a kid to get this kind of stuff to happen to me. It's still cool to me.
And it's one of my favorites. I love it. And I tell you, the office I work in, everybody turns it up as loud as they can every time it comes on. It's one that it doesn't get old. And again, the lyric, the beat, the rhythm, the music, every part of it is good. So good job with this. And here are the Kingsmen. He's Everything I Need. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends.
Weary, downtrodden believer, I know the burden reliever. He is the sinless redeemer. He's my best friend. I met him on bended knee. He met me at Calvary underneath an old rugged tree. That's where I've been. Now he dries every tear I cry. He answers when I ask why. He's every single little thing I need. About all he is, that's all I need. Christian, don't give up trying. Mountains were made for climbing. The one who walks beside me will stand by you. I've never known him to fail. He's conquered both death and hell. So do not doubt that he will prevail. I've seen what he can do. Now he dries every tear I cry. He answers when I ask why. He's every single little thing I need. He is faithful down to the end. He's closer than a brother's been. When I think about all he is, that's all I need. Answers when I ask why. He's every single little thing I need. He is faithful down to the end. He's closer.
Think about all he is, that's all I need. Now he dries every tear I cry. He answers when I ask why. He's every single little thing I need. He is faithful down to the end. He's closer than a brother's been. When I think about all he is, all I need, he's everything I need.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and Joseph Habedank's here, and we were talking about love and marriage earlier. Tell me about, I follow your wife on Twitter and stuff, and she's got a great sense of humor, and I get the sense, I don't know where I've gotten this, I don't know that I've met your mother, but I get the sense your mom's a character too. Is this accurate stuff I'm saying?
Wow, yeah, my mom is hilarious. In fact, my mom and my younger brother as well could both be stand-up comedians. And I'm not just saying that because they're part of my family, but because other people have told them that as well. My mom is constantly kidding, laughing, making jokes. It's amazing. Unfortunately, I did not get that gene. I wish I would have. Now, I can be crazy and goofy like my dad, but I didn't get the witty. You can say something and bam, she's right back with it. You know, you can kid her and she's got you pegged into a corner. So it's just a really special personality trait. But yeah, and Lindsay's the same way. She's just Lindsay's more goofy though. She says some things. She's borderline eccentric. I mean, she is just hilarious, and some of the stuff she comes up with is she's currently having a battle with these bumblebees and honeybees on the back porch of our house, and so she's been dealing with that this weekend, and so she's had many funny stories to tell. Apparently, she stands at the screen door and just sprays them through
that.
The screens. Yeah, I mean, she's nuts, and it's that kind of thing all of the time, every day. There's never a dull moment. But my mom always said, because of what we talked about earlier, because of me being somewhat of an old man or an old soul, she said, Lindsay's perfect for you because she will keep you young. that's definitely the case.
Hey, let's talk about this. Ivan Parker, and again, if you grew up, you know, with Gold City, and I know you grew up, you said one of the first people you met in the business at a very young age was Brian Free, and they sang together there with Gold City. Ivan Parker's got a song on his project called Mary's Wish, and you were telling me this is probably your favorite song you've ever written, right?
It is, yeah. This was the first song Matthew and I wrote after he left the group. We were... I believe we were parked somewhere in Camden or Huntington, Tennessee, over one of those West Tennessee towns, and Matthew had called me to write that day. And so we actually went and had lunch at O'Charley's, and we pulled in this little alley in between O'Charley's and I believe it was a Kohl's store, and we started writing the song. And we got the idea from his wife's first pregnancy with their son, Fletcher. And she said that I believe the baby was due in December around Christmas time, and she said, right before she had the baby, she said, you know what, now that the time has come, she said, it's almost like I wish he could stay inside because I don't want to expose him to the jadedness and the wickedness and the bad things that are in our world. And what she said next, I'll never forget, she said, and I just can't imagine how Mary must have felt.
Wow.
And I thought, my goodness, there has to be a song in there somewhere. So... A few months later, there was a group in Illinois that asked me to do a little date for them in Illinois. And I didn't end up doing the date, but it was going to be a Christmas thing. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool for me to write a Christmas song specifically for this concert? And so I took the idea that Lindsay, his wife, is also named Lindsay, had given us without even knowing it. And we started writing this song. And it is absolutely the most moving and my favorite. It moves me. It's the only song that Matthew and I have ever written that we cried while we were writing it. And it just talks about Mary being just a... Everybody thinks Mary was almost on Jesus's level, where she was almost like a goddess or this perfect little girl. And I'm sure that she was a great girl, obviously.
Right.
She was hand-picked by the Lord, but she was human. And what she had inside of her was holy. And so she must have had all these fears of here I'm holding this little baby, and to think that the only reason that he's really come here is to die. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. Not only is he going to die, but he will be brutally beaten and bruised for the iniquities of the world. And I can't imagine how she must have felt holding him as a little baby. Maybe she wasn't fully aware of everything that was going to take place. I don't know. But I do know that there's nothing in the Bible that contradicts the fact that she had to have been a worried young mother to think, man, this is Jesus. This is God in flesh. This is special, and yet I'm going to have to let him go. And every parent reaches that, I think, that point where they're kind of the emptiness syndrome thing, where they have to deal with their kids leaving home. But it's a whole other story when you realize a kid is coming into this earth for one sole purpose, and that is to die for the sins of the world. And I cannot imagine how she must have felt. And I hope it moves the listener as much as it moves me as an individual. I'm just so grateful that the Lord gave me the idea for this song. And not only the idea, but the fact that if it wasn't for this little baby, we wouldn't have a song to write. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that.
What was Ivan's response when he called you or talked to you about it after hearing it?
I still have the voicemail, actually. I saved it because Ivan was, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Ivan Parker. He was one of my heroes. Him and Mike Bolan. I loved Mike Bolan. As I got older, Mike Bolan's voice was one of my favorites. But Ivan, when I was a kid, was just, oh, you know, he was the lead singer for Gold City. And so it was just kind of a wow. I think he said something to the effect of, wow, please do not let anyone touch the song. I want to record it. Yeah. And I told him this. I said, well, that's fine, and I'm very excited, but I hope you're okay with me recording it one day, because I definitely want to record this song one day. It's just so special to me, and I hope it's done well for him. It's on his new Joyride album. I think it's the fourth cut on the album. And Roger Talley, I've got to give credit to him, because his arrangement, just the cello and the piano only on the track, is just absolutely impeccable. And, man, just what a beautiful arrangement. And Ivan does a great job. And I'm, again, to think that Ivan Parker's singing on a song that I wrote is pretty incredible to me.
She must have cried herself to sleep, knowing what she could not keep would be her son, the Holy One. Just a little virgin girl whose child would one day save the world. It hurt her soul, but she'd let him go. Though for now he'd be okay, I can almost hear her say, I wish that I could hold you in my loving arms forever, and a little baby boy you'd always be. But I know that you must grow to live a life that will be better once you've walked the lonely road to Calvary. And it breaks my heart to think of how you'll suffer on that day. I know the price must be paid, but I wish you could stay. The tiny hands that reached for her would all too soon have to endure great agony upon the tree. The heartbeat that she felt inside would soon become Earth's alibi. She had always feared the end was near. But until he had to go, she held the Savior close. breaks my heart to think of how you'll suffer on that day. I know the price must be paid, but I wish you could stay. I know the price must be paid, but I wish you could stay.
Listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, Joseph Habedank, and the songs that he's written or had a part in writing. And before we get to our next one, on a list I'm looking at here of some songs that have been put on hold. Now, for those of us who don't know what that means, someone has requested maybe the rights to it, but I see Natalie Grant listed here, and she's a contemporary Christian artist, but I have been blown away by Natalie's talent. You put her up against anybody in any field, I think, and she blew them away. So tell me about this song that you have, How You Hold Me. It's on hold. For Natalie Grant's pretty exciting.
Ironically enough, yeah. How You Hold Me is the name of the song. And this is my first contemporary Christian hold, and I'm not even entirely sure that I'm allowed to tell this yet, but back in November, it's a great story behind this song. My family was going through a pretty hard time, and my mom, as I mentioned before, is a single mother, just having a tough time, and I kind of wanted to write this song for her because she had been single for, I think, around 22 or 23 years she had been single. And I had this idea of, I just love how the Lord holds me when I'm going through something, or when I just need held. And I had a writing session on a Monday of this week in November, and it went awful. And I hadn't been writing much. Something about being in a writing room just absolutely terrifies me. And so I went home and I told Lindsay, I said, you know, I just don't think I can do this writing thing anymore. The fact that I get so nervous when I'm in these sessions, I don't know that I can do it. And she said, well, tomorrow will be better. And what she didn't realize was that tomorrow I was writing with Tony Wood and Sue Smith. Tony Wood is probably one of the most highly regarded songwriters in Nashville, and Sue Smith is probably the most highly regarded female writers in Nashville. And I've been trying to get to write with Tony Wood for months, and I just couldn't get a hold of him. And finally, he reached out to me through Sue. And so this was a dream come true. And so I sat down with him in Franklin, Tennessee, and I sang them the chorus to my song, How You Hold Me. And it was the biggest encouragement to look at them and to think, oh, they get it. I can do this. It was like a feeling of, I can do this. I can actually write. I didn't realize, you know, and I'd had 100 cuts or so, but I was to the point where I thought, I just can't do this anymore. Yeah. And this song is special to me, not only because of my family and it came from a personal tragedy, but also because it came at a time when I was really ready to throw in the towel, not to be melodramatic, but I mean, it was just a tough time in my life. And I've got to thank Tony Wood and Sue Smith for the just the encouragement that they've given me and the mentoring. And they've taken me under their wing, whether they've realized it or not. And we wrote this in November, and it was just held back in May for Natalie Grant by Word Music. And we will see what happens. It's not a guaranteed cut, but the fact that they thought it well enough to hold is still a pretty big honor. And I love getting to write these songs, and I'm so grateful that I get to do it. And I'm grateful for people like Tony and Sue and Natalie and even tragedies in your life that can bring songs like this.
And songs on the list like Almost Morning, that's here by the Perrys, which was a title cut. Great song that I think is just incredible that you had a part in writing.
You can't seem to hide the hurt written on your face. You're broken inside, longing for love's embrace. It might be a while before you smile, I know, 'cause I fought that fight. And weeping may endure for a night, but it's almost almost the morning. Joy will replace the tears, calm all your darkest fears. It won't be long till the dawn. Tomorrow's another day to live free of all your pain. So don't give up on your faith, 'cause it's almost morning. I've been where you are. I've had my heart break too. I've cried in the dark. I can relate with you. I have prayed to see the sun break free while the storm's still inside. So when your darkness consumes the guiding light, remember it's almost morning. Joy will replace the tears, calm all your darkest fears. It won't be long till the dawn. Tomorrow's another day to live free of all your pain. So don't give up on your faith, 'cause it's almost morning. It's almost morning. It's almost morning. No, don't give up on your faith, 'cause it's almost morning.
Incredible songwriting, incredible guy, incredible voice. I still think that some of the classic Perry songs I could go back and recut with your voice, and I'd be fine with that. Joseph Habedank has been my guest for the hour. You're a big football fan, aren't you?
Yeah, Green Bay Packers all the way. Been a Packers fan since I was in the fourth grade. Love them.
And people can follow you on Twitter and through the Perry's website and catch up and keep up to date with you and your wife.
Yeah, actually the best way to keep up with me is Twitter, at josephhabedank.com. That's H-A-B-E-D-A-N-K. It's pretty tricky, but that's the best way. I usually update it. I get on Twitter every night when I get off stage. I go to the back lounge, I call my wife, and I get on Twitter every night. So yeah, please, I'd love to hear from you. And thank you all so much for listening to my songs, and thank you for those of you that like them. I'm so grateful for you, and thank you, Daniel, for having me. It is an honor. Very much a privilege for me. So thank you.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.